Are you lucky? Researchers say living a charmed life is more about the choices you make than fate. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back with four behaviors that increase your odds of finding a pot of gold at the end of your rainbow.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
According to psychologist Richard Wiseman, people blessed with good fortune practice four behaviors that set them apart. Lucky people don't wait around for a windfall. They make luck happen. They network and keep an eye out for opportunities, then act on them. Lucky people develop their intuition and trust their gut feelings. They expect good things to happen to them. They persist in working towards their goals because they believe in positive outcomes. These expectations become self-fulfilling prophecies. And finally, lucky people turn lemons into lemonade. They don't dwell on setbacks, but instead find ways to turn situations around in their favor. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, encouraging you to make the switch from spy mail to start mail.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. As they march into the palaces of the high and mighty, I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, I think. Good afternoon, Catherine Albrecht here. So glad to be with you today with the latest on what's going on in the world. Did you guys see the story that came out yesterday showing that ChatGPT had given a gentleman who was seeking health advice about supplements and how to reduce the amount of sodium in his diet? He was actually given advice that poisoned him. And this is yet, if you needed a reminder, I don't think you do listening to my show, but if you needed a reminder of why it is not a good idea to just unthinkingly type your every question into some form of AI search engine, for most people, ChatGPT, this probably should be a reminder, a wake-up call. Now, the industry, the AI industry, I guess you could call it, they refer to these incidents as hallucinations. But in reality, I think they're something very different. I've actually read several academic articles condemning the use of the word hallucination and instead using the word prevarication, which is lies. There's a whole bunch of different words that they've tried to propose. But essentially, about, depending on the model you're using, between 1% and 20% of the time, the answer that you will receive from an artificial intelligence bot will not be true. It will have either small errors, massive errors, or potentially even deadly errors. All right, let me read you this article. This is all over the internet, but the version, I've read the original academic article, which I'll share with you in a sec, but this is the summary. This is from The Hill. And let me read it. Man poisons himself after taking ChatGPT's dietary advice. A 60-year-old man was hospitalized for bromide poisoning. He had asked ChatGPT for alternatives to salt. And then this little article goes into something else. Bromide toxicity was far more common in the 20th century. In other words, 1900s. All right, let me read this. A 60-year-old man wound up in the hospital after seeking dietary advice from ChatGPT and accidentally poisoning himself. According to a report, and this is the academic article I'm going to read you, published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, so that's a very legitimate medical journal, the man wanted to eliminate salt from his diet, so he asked ChatGPT for a replacement. The AI platform recommended sodium bromide. Now, you know that sodium chloride is salt, so this is sodium bromide, a chemical often used in pesticides as a substitute. The man then purchased sodium bromide online, put it in his salt shakers, and replaced salt with that for 3 months. The man eventually went to the hospital, fearing his neighbor was trying to poison him. There, doctors discovered he was suffering from bromide toxicity, which causes paranoia and hallucination. So he knew something was wrong, but unfortunately, the side effect of this also caused him to become paranoid. So instead of just saying to himself, I'm really sick, I better get to the doctor, he began believing that all of his symptoms were the result of some conspiracy involving something or other, which is what happens in paranoid kinds of situations like this. Okay. Then it goes on, bromide toxicity was more common in the 20th century when bromide salts were used in various over-the-counter medications. Now, this is a little stunning to me. Cases declined sharply after the FDA phased out bromide. Now, when do you think they did that? 1930, 1950? No. They phased it out gradually between the years 1975 and 1989. So if you were alive during that period, chances are pretty good you were consuming bromide. And had you consumed it in large enough quantities, you might have also wound up in the hospital. But nowadays, there's not any FDA-approved way to ingest this stuff. So concluding this article, the case highlights the dangers of relying on ChatGPT for complex health decisions without sufficient understanding, and now here you go, listen to this, or proper AI literacy. Now, this is a new thing. This concept that it's your own darn fault if you log on to some AI, ask it a question, and it gives you a false answer. In the past, like a month ago, we would have said that's actually really kind of horrible that this particular ChatGPT instance provided this deadly piece of advice. Really bad. But notice the spin that's happening. All right, I want to talk a little bit more about this particular story, but I also want to have you look at the larger picture of the spin. So in the past, as people were discovering this, they were like, oh no, it's lying to us. Oh no, it's giving us confidently with absolutely no disclaimers at all. It's giving us confidently giving us false information. There's a problem with AI. And that is true. There's a problem with AI when it gives you advice like this. In the past, and up until very recently, the response was, there's a problem with AI, but now they've figured out how to flip it around and spin it, and now there's a problem with this guy. It's his fault he wound up in the hospital. Don't go suing ChatGPT because you wound up in the hospital or maybe died because of taking its advice. No, no, no. The real problem isn't that it's giving deadly advice to people. The real problem is that they're not properly literate in knowing how to navigate around its deadly advice. Do you see the difference? And this is, I think it's an important thing that we note, that the dialogue that you will see in all of these problems, right? All of these different situations where AI gives deadly advice to someone, the response now is, oh yeah, that's just how it behaves. And if you didn't know that, well, then it's your fault. Now, this is called, I was talking about this back in the privacy invading days when I was a privacy advocate. It is victim blaming, victim shaming, right? And we've heard about that in all sorts of different settings. Well, she shouldn't have been walking down the empty street, you know, at 10 o'clock at night if she didn't expect something bad. It's her fault for walking on the street, right? In this case, while he shouldn't have relied on this advice, he should have known better. He should have known that wasn't safe. Well, that's victim blaming, first of all. And the reality is it's unfortunate that women cannot walk on certain streets at 10 p.m. But it's not their fault that they can't do that. It's the fault of the predators and the criminals who will do bad things to them, right? If we lived in a perfectly safe community and environment, walking around at any time shouldn't be a problem. And the people doing it are not, quote unquote, to blame if something happens. They never are. I remember my mom, who has passed away. I don't know if the right thing to say there, but my mom has passed away. She used to teach at a public school for very troubled and kids who had extra academic needs, and a lot of her students were gang members. Now, this was in the LA area, and I remember one time having this conversation with her that if you are a teacher at that school and you leave your purse, you don't lock it up, and you leave it, say, in a drawer, like maybe your front desk teacher drawer, and you later come back and either it's stolen, it's been rifled through, money's missing, etc., then the attitude on the part of the students is that you're dumb and you deserve to have that happen to you. And I remember my mom being absolutely stunned. Her first week at school, I think it was her first day, she walked out to the parking lot and her car was gone. And she looked all around. Her car was not in the parking lot. And she came back inside, went to the main office and said, "What's happened to my car?" And then she saw some of these students sort of snickering, watching her. And it turned out that those students had hotwired her car. These are criminals, right? These are kids who know how to do stuff like this. So they had broken into her, somehow managed to use like the lockpick thing that the tow truck driver uses if you lock yourself out. You know, that little thing you use like a inflatable little balloon to get enough space. And then you put the little thingy down there and you pull it open. So they had done that and then hotwired her car and then driven it across the street. And it turns out that was just a rite of passage for all new teachers at the school. Eventually, she was like their favorite teacher and they would defend her against things like that. But that, you know, that notion that people who are dumb enough to, leave their purse hanging out, believe AI, walk down a street, it's their fault. They deserve it. And that's what we're starting to see with AI. All right, I'm Catherine Albrecht. I'll be right back.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business. But if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Flowing like a gentle river, righteousness rolling over you like waves in the sea. Gentle river, the righteousness rolling over you like waves in the sea.
I love this song. I could just let it go, but I have so much to say. I gotta break in here and continue saying it. But if you want to hear that song, I will post a link to it in my archives at katherine-albrecht.com. It is, you can find it on Spotify or YouTube if you look up Project of Love. That's the artist and the word peace. So incredibly beautiful. I sometimes will play that song just when I need some peace. I'll just go, okay, I'll say a prayer and just clear the decks, clear my mind, put on that song, and I always feel better. All right, so actually David is reminding me of the fact that I wasn't here yesterday and did not explain, so let me explain that. So you heard a rebroadcast on yesterday's show because the second Tuesday of every month, I have the board meeting from my county's community mental health board. And so that's where I was last night. And so that will be pretty much every second Tuesday from now, I guess, for like 3 years, because that's how long the board appointments last. And if you have, as listeners, a recommendation for a particular show that you found valuable and you would like it to be rebroadcast so that other listeners can hear it as well, if you could do me a huge favor, either type it into the chat room at katherine-albrecht.com in the live chat. You could text it to KHNC, to me, at 877-536-1360. You can also email me with that or any other concerns or questions or requests that you have by going to katherine-albrecht.com. And in the pull-down menu bar at the very bottom, it says Message Me. You fill that out, hit send, and it winds up in my start mail inbox as an email. So I will respond to it that way. So if you could just let me know any shows that you found valuable and interesting, let me know the date that they aired. You can actually go back. If you go on to katherine-albrecht.com, that pull-down menu, click on Radio Show. And at the bottom, it says click here for radio archive. And so if you do that, you can see the archives of all the shows I've done. Find the one that you thought was good and should be rebroadcast, because we're going to be doing that one day a month going forward. All right. Let's see. AI. I've got my little article here. Let me get the other one up. All right, I'm just going to read. This is the Annals of Internal Medicine Clinical Cases, co-published by the American College of Physicians and the American Heart Association. I'm going to talk about those guys shortly. A case of bromism influenced by use of artificial intelligence. Now, the date on this is August 5th, 2025. So this is a new article. It took the mainstream news media a little while to find it. I had not seen it. I'm actually going to sign up for some updates on things like this so they come right into my inbox sooner. But let me read what they have to say. All right, so the abstract. Ingestion of bromide can lead to a toxic syndrome known as bromism. I'm thinking of all the bros out there, the bronies. All right. While this condition is less common than it was in the early 20th century, it remains important to describe the associated symptoms and risks because bromide-containing substances have become more readily available on the internet. Now, just because you can buy a substance or a supplement through Amazon does not mean that it won't hurt you. So you need to do your research, and it's becoming more challenging to do research, isn't it? Because every time we want to look something up now, we're like, is that the truth? Or is that AI spinning lies? And I think it's going to become even harder and harder as we go forward. There is going to be a place for, and I'd say the cutoff is probably mid-2023. That's my cutoff. That's the cutoff I'm going to use, somewhere in 2023, that any information that I can verifiably confirm was released into the world of information prior to 2023, I'm likely to believe that it's actually true. Anything released after 2023, I'm going to want to back up with additional information. Now, think that through. So if I'm writing a book, right? Well, I am going on to Anna's archive at annas-archive.org, and I'm going back and I'm looking at books, magazines, pamphlets, whatever I can find on the particular topic that was published prior to, around 2015. Like if I can find something from the 80s, about a historical topic, I'm
pretty positive. I know there's other people with conspiracy theories saying AI is like reaching back in time, changing our history. I don't believe it. If it came from a prior era, if it's a book off my shelf, like I'm actually glad I own books now. I can pull a book off my shelf and look it up because it's the AI can't get into all of our books and change the text, but they certainly can go on the internet and start messing with what's available. So if I want to know about bromide, if I want to know if a supplement that is available on Amazon containing bromide is healthy or not, I will probably start by doing a search, and then I will poke around and look at all the things I can find. And if it involves medical issues, I will go to pubmed.gov, which I've told you guys about before. That is the National Institutes of Health has done a huge service to the world by putting abstracts and in some cases full text, links to full text articles of all of the medical journal articles that have been published over the last couple, I don't know, last decade or so. And I think they're in the process of putting up older ones as well. So if I were this guy, and well, first of all, I would never, ever interact with ChatGPT. I don't speak to it. I don't talk to it. I don't load it. I don't go to the page. I am not allowed to touch it because I'm specifically told to touch no unclean thing and that thing is filthy. But let us say that someone else told me, well, you know, here's what I heard is bromide. And I would say, where'd you hear that? If they said AI, I'd go, okay, well, let me do some research. And I would start my research by going to Startpage, which is my search engine, startpage.com. They used to be part of Startmail. I worked for Startpage for many years, and the company has been sold. So I can't 1,000,000% vouch for it personally as I used to be able to, but as far as I can tell, they are still private, and that's the search engine that I use. So I would go to startpage.com, which is a search engine just like Google or DuckDuckGo, and I would type in there bromide, and I'd look, I'd see, and I would see all this information that it was unhealthy, bad for you. I'd probably see toxicology, you know, write-ups from government agencies. You know, there would be a lot of information on it, and I would then immediately go, not good. But let's say what I found was a combination of things saying, hey, it's a great substitute for salt, but then other things saying it's really deadly and toxic. What would I do at that point? I would probably go to PubMed.gov because, to the best of my knowledge, it has not yet been infiltrated by or its contents controlled by AI. That may be the case in the future. I'm almost positive it's not the case now. I would type in bromide, like safety profile or something like that. And I would get back a ton of articles and I would click on the ones that were prior to 2023. Honestly, that's what I would do. And then I would read them and go, wow, I just got lied to. This stuff would have killed me if I'd taken it. So you know how when the internet first came out, I taught a summer school class at a middle school. And it was called, what do I even call this? I don't even know the name of it. But it was how to look things up. Remember, these are kids, right? So they're like sixth grade. You'd be like between the ages of maybe 11 and 13, right? And so I had these kids in there, sixth and seventh grade in the summer, and I taught them how to look things up. Now, when I was a kid, you look things up by going onto, you went to the library, you got on your little bike, you pedaled a couple blocks, you left it in the bushes outside, you went into the library, and you went to the card catalog, and you looked up your topic. And if you were lucky, the library would have four or five books on that topic. Maybe they just have one, maybe they'd have none, right? But you'd look it up, that's how you'd find out. There were also encyclopedias. So in the case of bromide, I doubt I was going to find in my little local library books on bromide, but what I could find was a big set of encyclopedias, right? So I would go in and I would look up bromide in the encyclopedia. Isn't it shocking that we may actually get to the point where those old Funkin' Wagnalls and those old, you know, World Book encyclopedias could actually be worth their weight in gold? It's crazy. I mean, if you have one, don't get rid of it. If you see one in a thrift store, cheap, grab it. So I could look up bromide back then, but nowadays, that's not the way you look things up anymore. All right, so here I am teaching my middle school class, and I taught this in, let me think, what year would that be? Like 1990-ish, probably 1990. The web was not yet available, and that came out when I was in graduate school in 92. So this would have been 89 or 90, right? And the thing I was teaching them was how no longer are you going to go to the card catalog. But guess what? You can do these other things. And what's the internet? The internet must have been somewhat available. Anyway, so it's irrelevant now, but I had like five different methods for the, quote, modern era of, you know, 1990, of how you look things up and find things out. Well, if I were teaching that class again now, and I think it needs to be taught again now, frankly, if I were teaching that class again now, I would write down specifically the steps you need to do to look something up in the era of artificial intelligence. I don't know, maybe I should write a guide on it. You know, maybe maybe I should do exactly that. Take these steps that I would go through and the places that I would refer to, you know, that I would go to and the steps I would take in order to weed out misinformation, overt lies and falsehoods that are dangerous from AI that the AI industry wants to call hallucinations. And, you know, they say that you do not have AI literacy. Hang on, let me get that phrase again because it really was stuck in my craw here. Yeah, the case highlights the dangers. This is in The Hill, kind of summarizing this medical article. The case highlights the dangers of relying on ChatGPT for complex health decisions without sufficient understanding. All right, well, that's your fault, right? You don't understand. Or proper AI literacy. Well, that's your fault. You're just not literate, right? See the burden, blaming the victim, and the other thing is called burden shifting. It's no longer their burden to get it right. It's your burden to figure it out when they don't. All right, after this break, we're going to be welcoming Pastor Brendan Battaglio from Crossroads, talking about our field training courses. Stay tuned.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com. Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
I am the Lord who opened the way through the waters, making a dry path through the sea. I am the Lord who opened the way through the waters, making a dry path through the sea.
Hey, I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. So for this segment, I want to remind you guys that the classes that Pastor Anthony in his church are offering, that's my church, the fieldtraining.org classes are, once again, we're starting a new semester. They begin on September 8th. And joining us today to talk about them are two of the instructors from the classes, Pastor Justin Whitcomb, Academic Dean of Field USA Ministry Training and a Senior Pastor at Veritas Bible Church. Hello, Justin, Pastor Justin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, great. And we're also joined by Pastor Brendan Battaglio. He is the associate pastor of Crossroads Community Church. He works alongside Pastor Anthony, and he's also an instructor at Field USA Ministry Training. Welcome, Brendan.
Hey, Catherine. Great to be here.
It's great to have you both here. So just to let listeners know what the plan is, you guys are going to join me for this segment. And then just so the listeners know, we're going to close out with discussing that truth verification. How do you tell what's real and what isn't for the last segment? All right. Well, let's just dive in. So first of all, Justin, we've talked about, or I guess your pastor, Justin, We've talked about on the show before, I've had Pastor Anthony on, and I've talked about the Field USA Ministry training courses. And I'm wondering if you can just give us kind of a brief overview and let us know how you got involved.
Yeah, so just a brief overview of our Field USA Ministry training. You know, we have the vision to really bring sound theological training to the practical day-to-day ministry of all people. We believe that the Lord has called us all to the harvest, and so we believe that all need to be equipped. Now he calls us into different capacities, and so we've been currently working on two different avenues and tracks for our ministry training. One track more academically rigorous, one for more of a lay person. And so the idea is to offer training for ministry in various capacities to accommodate other people. And how I was just brought in is that my church is also in the same denomination as Pastor Anthony and Pastor Brendan's churches. And so as they were looking to just advance the reach of the ministry training, the partnership began with me and them, as I have a history with adult education and training, and so and also importantly, online education.
Awesome. And whenever the word denomination comes up, I'm sure people are like, the denomination of Crossroads Community Church and Veritas Bible Church is part of, correct me if I'm wrong, the Mission Church.
Yeah, so right? Fully known as Missionary Church USA.
Missionary yeah. Church USA. So doctrinally, what I can say, based on my own experience working with in my church, is it's pretty much a Bible church, meaning based on Scripture, everything that is spoken in my church is absolutely verifiable and backed up in Scripture and really doesn't stray from it. And then on top of that, you can add this missionary component, this desire to go out into the community and spread God's word and the freedom that comes with knowing him. Do I have that kind of right, Pastor Justin?
Yeah. I feel like that's right on the head of the nail right there.
Okay.
Know, the church is thought to be biblicist and missional.
Awesome. Okay, so I'm going to ask this next question of Pastor Brendan. So the courses are available online now. My listeners already know this. I'm going to go over how you get them, and then you can fill me in on which ones are being offered this semester. So the courses are available. You can look at the list if you go to fieldtraining.org, and click on academics, and you'll see a bunch of different classes listed. The courses meet for an hour and a half a week. Some of them are through Zoom. Some of them are through Zoom sessions that have been pre-recorded, simply to allow them to offer more than there is potentially staff to teach. And the cost for them is $100 per course, which is just crazy inexpensive. I have taken two of those courses myself, found them absolutely amazing. I bought a book to go with it because they do assign a book. Both of them, the books that I have read, have been books you can just get off Amazon. They're not expensive textbooks. And then we meet once a week for an hour and a half. We meet in a group, and the instructor, which would be Pastor Justin or Pastor Brendan or Pastor Anthony, leads the course, assigns the homework, which is usually, you know, half a page of thoughtful response to the reading, and then we do it again. So that's the background. Now, Pastor Brendan, I took the Old Testament survey with you, and I thought it was absolutely wonderful. What are the classes available this semester?
Yeah, we've got a full slate ahead of us, Catherine. We're going to have 9 courses to choose from this time around. Now, Pastor Anthony's course will be called Church on Mission, which is a class that examines how churches operate and grow and, you know, multiply in the harvest field. So it's a great class to take if you want to learn how to spur people on in your church towards disciple-making. Next, we'll have a class called APESTS, which is facilitated by a wonderful teacher named Carrie Skatska, and will focus on the gifts that God has given the church. More specifically, the apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. And as you already astutely pointed out, you can join in on both Anthony and Carrie's classes on Zoom, so you don't need to live nearby or attend in person or anything. Now, what's interesting here is Pastor Justin will be teaching a variety of doctrinal-based courtships. He'll be teaching, if I'm not mistaken, Bible interpretation, systematic theology 2, and the practice of preaching. And preaching might be a little bit more of a specialized class for, shall we say, prospective ministers, but Bible interpretation and systematic theology 2 are both great classes for anyone who wants to grow in their knowledge of the faith and understand sort of why they believe what they believe. And I can say from firsthand experience that Justin's got a head for this kind of stuff, so those classes are sure to be awesome. And actually, something interesting about Justin's classes, and mine as well for that matter, is that they're what's called asynchronous online classes. So this means they have no formal meeting time. Instead, class content will be released weekly, and then students can go through the work and the lecture at their own pace. So it's great for busy schedules, which we all have. And then finally, I'll be teaching 2 theological courses as well, along with Old Testament Survey and New Testament Survey, which are great classes to take if you want to learn more about the overarching story of the Bible. And that's what we're offering this semester.
Fantastic. Now, the courses begin next week? No, the week of, hang on, September 8th?
September 8th.
And how long do they, and they run for 12 weeks?
12 weeks, correct.
Okay, so it's not a huge time commitment. I did not find it to be a huge time commitment. If you're available, so it's 6:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. So for people listening to us in Colorado and KHNC, it would be, hang on, let me do the math, 4:30 to 6 p.m. If you're not available then I would recommend taking an asynchronous class because at that point you do not need to participate in the live Zoom trainings. All right, as far as who can take these classes, and we're coming up on our last minute or so here, they're really, Pastor Brendan, for both just people like me who want to learn more, and also Pastor Justin, as you described, for people who are actually seeking to be ordained in the ministry or to receive a ministry license. And you can also audit them if there's space. So I talked to Pastor Anthony about this. If you want to audit one of these courses, there is no fee. You would still be expected to attend the lectures. You would still be expected to do the homework. But if you don't need an actual grade, you can audit the class, and that is actually free if there's room. So that would be something you'd know at the very end. All right, Justin, Pastor Justin, how do you enroll? How do people sign up?
Yeah, so the process for enrolling has actually been made pretty simple and streamlined. We have our website, which is fieldtraining.org. And once you go onto the website, at the very top banner, there is a option that says enroll in classes. And that way you can go and select the courses that you would like to register for. So it's as you see all the course offerings there. It will give a description of each. And then at the bottom, there's the option for registration. However, also, if there's any additional questions, there is contact information on that same page. And individuals can reach out, and we can help answer any questions and help with registration as well.
All right. You can also reach out to me on this program. You can text me, 877-536-1360. You can email me in the message me box on katherine-albrecht.com. Happy to answer any questions. And then there's a phone number on here, too. So if you click on enrolling classes, let me just tell you what you're going to find. It says fall 2025 classes. It has a description of each one. And when you want to sign up, you click registration. So the button at the bottom, that gives you yet a more thorough description of all the classes. You can click on the class, read all about it, and there's a green button that says register, and that's how you sign up. So hopefully people will be joining this group. Over 200 people have already taken these courses from all over the country since 2022. They're absolutely scripturally sound, academically sound, and I have gotten a tremendous amount out of the Old Testament and leadership courses that I've taken. All right, thank you so much, Pastor Justin, for joining us from Veritas Bible Church. I appreciate you being with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you also. Thank you also to Pastor Brendan Pataglio, Associate Pastor of Crossroads Community Church. It was so great having you guys on.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
Okay. Well, you wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Thank you.
Looking for a...
made you, and I will not forget you. I have swept away your sins like a cloud. I, the Lord, made you, and I will not forget you. I have swept away your sins like a cloud.
I'm back. All right. So fieldtraining.org, please sign up. They're wonderful classes, and it's a way for all of us, wherever we are around the country or around the globe, to kind of jointly participate in a training. Pastor Anthony very fully gets and sees the picture that I've been telling you about. And I fully believe that the Lord is raising up His people for this time in really crucial and critical ways. And Pastor Anthony knows what's going on. I know what's going on. Become part of our community. Sign up for a course. You'll get to, we'll get to see each other through Zoom. We'll be able to have conversations. We'll have shared background and shared reading assignments and such. So I strongly encourage you to sign up. If you don't have $100, then sign up to audit. You know, if you don't want the credit. By the way, if you get, what is it, 13? I need to look. I thought it was 16, but I think it's less. If you complete those classes with a passing grade, you will actually get a ministry certificate. It's pretty cool. So if you want to take them for a grade, go ahead, pay the $100, do the work, do it, you know, submit it on time and get yourself a ministry license in the Mission Church. I probably should do that, but I've been so busy and pulled in so many directions that I was not able to devote like all the time to get the A-pluses on the homework and get it in on time, just because I had meetings and I had late night board sessions and I had all sorts, well, not late night, but, you know, I missed a lot of classes because they were actually scheduled on a day that I had a commitment. So for me, it's a little bit harder, but I can tell you, if I were not in this particular phase of my life, this little season of my life right now, I would probably be getting that ministry license. And it doesn't mean that I would become a pastor or a preacher, because my read of the Bible says that as a woman, that's not really my place. But absolutely to have that background and have that legitimacy. So if I want to talk about something scriptural, I would be able to do that with some letters after my name. So you can do the same, or audit, or just learn. Fieldtraining.org. All right. I want to talk about my last couple minutes here, kind of expanding on, we talked about on what we discussed on being told to take a toxic substance. So ChatGPT telling the 60-year-old guy that he needs to take it, that he should take this substance, and it's fine, and it's what he should do, and it's toxic. Okay, this has got me thinking. I probably need to do a whole show on this, but let me see what I can fit in this last segment. So there was a story in the news last week or the week before, and it was about a German photographer who was being fired from his German publication, whatever it was, whatever media outlet he was working for being found to have staged hunger photos or photos of children reaching out with bowls, reaching out with bowls, starving, to the food distributions that are happening in Gaza. Now, Gaza is a whole other topic. We probably should spend a lot of time on that. They're being decimated, just absolutely turned to rubble. It's horrifying what's happening in Gaza. All right, but that's not what this is about. What I want to talk about right now, with that disclaimer out of the way, I want to talk about how do you know what's true? Okay, so I had seen in passing these pictures, and it's a bunch of hungry looking kids, and they are reaching with outstretched arms, holding empty bowls, trying to get them filled at a food distribution. It's very heartbreaking, right? You see these hungry kids and there's no food in the bowls. Well, the article that came out, I want to say last week or before, about this photographer, is they discovered that the photographer was staging those photos. And so another photographer took a picture of him. He's crouched down like photographers do, kind of on one knee with his camera looking up. And they have a staged sort of like a low retaining wall. And then all these kids over the retaining wall stretching out their bowls, and there is no food distribution going on at all. There's just these, it's all stage, right? And so I'm sure the instructions he gave to them were, here's some bowls, or go home and get your bowls so they all look different, and meet me there at whatever time, and we're going to show the world that you're not getting enough food. And when they all got there, he said, okay, here's how I want you. All right, you in front, you over here. All right, hold out your bowls and look as hungry as you can. Look desperate. Look like you're crying. And so the kids, I'm sure, did that, and he took their picture, and it was widely published and disseminated around the globe and used as, you know, to kind of further this narrative. Now, the narratives are a whole other story. We'll be talking more about narratives because it's going to become a big issue. But to further a particular narrative, which is that Gazans are starving. Well, as far as I can tell, and again, now I'm getting into like the real gray area of what can you even tell. As far as I can tell, they are starving. Okay. But this guy was staging photos, and his explanation was, well, you know, I'm just, I'm representing reality. I'm showing you what's actually happening. It just wasn't happening when I took the picture. Okay. So he was fired for that. And there's been a discussion about whether that was wrong or not. Well, obviously, journalistically, that's like totally unacceptable. You can't, like, that's really bad. If you're publishing something and saying, this is a photo of something that's happening, you can't stage that. You can say, you know, like, what do they say sometimes, like reenactment? You know, they'll do that on like the TV shows when they're knocking on the door and the SWAT team's busting in, and then they'll say underneath reenactment, right? So you could say that. You could say this is a reenactment of what starving children actually are doing in other locations, but you can't put it there and say this is real. Now, here's the catch. Are you ready for the zinger within the zinger? So here I am, right? I'm looking at this picture of this photographer on one knee taking these pictures of these kids. And it hits me that even that picture could be made up and fake. In fact, you could probably go onto one of these AI sites that will make pictures for you, and you could actually type that in. Give me a picture of a photographer, and I want it to be this guy, you can even name him, on his knees, and 20 Gazan children holding out bowls, and show me that he make a picture of him staging it. And that's when it hit me that the only way in the past we've ever been able to know what we know is because we could trust that when we saw pictures, they were real pictures, because there was no way to make it otherwise, right? You could do kind of some Photoshop and sort of manipulate it, but you couldn't create out of whole cloth a complete lie, right? The only way you or I know what is going on in Gaza and Israel, in fact, the only way you and I, unless you've been there, know that there is such a place as Gaza and Israel, know that they even exist, that they've ever existed, is because we've been told that. We've seen photos of it. We've seen write-ups of it. And at the time, prior to, let me say 2020, I'll say 2020, right? Anything before 20, maybe even 2015, I don't know. But I had that information way back as a kid. So at this moment in time, 2025, if somebody were to tell me out of the blue that there was such a place and I hadn't really heard about it before, I'd be skeptical. If I got pictures and people claiming to be there and saying things, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. Could you see something that says, hey, this is our moon base? You moon landing people probably laughing. This is our moon base, and here are live video interviews from our new moon base. Well, is it real? Is it not? So I think the thing I talked about before the break, it's just like before we were joined by our guests, the thing that I'm thinking is that we need to, as a society, as a group of people who are kind of in the know figuring this out, we need to figure out, how do we determine what is and isn't real? How do we know? Like, how do we know? How do I even know that that German photographer who was fired from that publication even existed? I don't. Never heard his name before. Can't read German. I don't know. So it's kind of like we're now in a phase of society where it could be the exposure of a lie, which is what this story was, that itself could be a lie. So we could have lies exposing lies that are themselves. We could be to a point where we could be so tangled up that we no longer know what's true. And the result of this is it's causing all of us to go, I just don't know. I'm not even going to try to figure it out. Nothing is knowable anymore. And if you go on ChatGPT and you ask questions, what was one of these? I'll find it for a future show. But one researcher went on ChatGPT and said, when was the last time the Eiffel Tower was transported across the Egyptian desert? And ChatGPT very confidently gave the answer that that happened in 2016. didn't skip a beat, didn't say what, you can't. The Eiffel Tower is like permanently installed in Paris. It's not moving. And secondly, why would you, you know, you couldn't even get it to Egypt. And it's certainly, no, it didn't say any of that. What it said is, yeah, that happened. I think it even repeated the question and said the last time the Eiffel Tower was transported across the Egyptian desert happened in 2016. And it will then go on and give you a really, you could say, well, who did it? And it would give you the names and the university involved or the, you know, construction company. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it does not say, like, I don't know. I don't think ChatGPT has, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it ever says, I don't know the answer to your question. If it doesn't know, because obviously it doesn't know the last time the Eiffel Tower went across the Egyptian desert, because it never has, but instead of going, I'm not aware of that, I don't know, it will say, oh, well, it must have happened, so let me just act like I know and put it out there. All right, so lots of things for us to untangle and process and work through in this new world we're living in. And I'm right here to help you do it. So tune in. All right. This is Dr. Catherine Albrecht. My website, catherine-albrecht.com. There are archives. Spread these far and wide so people start learning the truth. All right. We'll be back again tomorrow. I will see you then. Meanwhile, thank you so much for listening, and God bless you all. All right. Bye-bye.